When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Sleepover Cinema, where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of those who don't remember the plot of Scooby-Doo at all, but could draw the Daphne looks from memory. I'm Hannah Leach.
And I'm Audrey Leach. We are the sister filmmaking duo, also known as Two Pink Pictures, and we haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them.
We're going to explore the good, the bad, and the nonsensical of the movies that first inspired our love for film in an attempt to answer the question, are these movies actually good? And at the end of the day, do we really care if they are?
Today, we are talking about 2002's Scooby-Doo.
I'll have whatever he's having.
From Warner Brothers Pictures,
Mystery Inc. reunites.
Scooby and his crew are back on the case.
Run! Run! I'm trying, buddy.
And now, on an island of mystery.
Welcome to Spooky Island.
They have...
Monster!
A monster?
No clue.
Okay, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast this week. Audrey, how's your week going?
My week is going great because the company that I work for is just not giving me things to do. And so I can use
excellent.
My time. Yeah, I can just do the stuff that I need to do. Like I did laundry today.
Ooh.
You know, there's no better feeling than having an empty hamper.
That is absolutely true. I definitely agree.
People don't talk about that.
They're not ready to talk about it. Someday
clearly
we'll get there
not.
As a society. I watched the first half of the first episode of the new season of Euphoria while on the elliptical today and texted Audrey halfway through expressing concerns. But I'm trying my best. You know, I think that the pandemic has softened me to the point where if a show doesn't just make me feel good, I like can't handle it. So that's on me, but it's my current truth. So, okay, so we have our hot take of the week as usual, sound effect here. And we have a question asked by multiple parties. We have this question from Alyssa Jane Keown. Sorry if I said your last name wrong. And Me Against the Podcast. They both asked Disney Channel versus Nickelodeon. I know my answer. What's yours?
You would say Nickelodeon.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
I'm kind of tempted to say Nickelodeon because, I mean, the energy of the shows that we're thinking of, like Drake and Josh, Zoe 101, As Told by Ginger, right?
Yes, I loved that show.
Like, they versus, you know, Hannah Montana, That's So Raven, Phil of the Future, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes. Well, I liked those, though.
I liked them, too, but I think Nickelodeon had this, like, cool factor that mm-hmm. Disney Channel couldn't attain. Like,
yeah.
Never was a DCOM. Like, when we were at that age, it wasn't cool to love the shows. Like, I feel like it wasn't cool. Everybody watched them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess fifth grade, it might be okay or cool. But, like, once you get into the, like, sixth, seventh, eighth range, it's
yes.
not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that is actually kind of what I was going to say, which is that, well, first of all, we had a weird experience with Disney Channel because we didn't discover the existence of Disney Channel probably until like 2005 or so. So I already felt a little old for it by the time that we got it. I was also a very precocious child, as I'm sure you are very unsurprised to hear. So by the time we got there, I wasn't really that into anything they had because it was also like around when like the Hannah Montana era was beginning, which, as I have stated on this podcast before, I was not a Hannah Montana fan or like Wizards of Waverly Place or any of those. So I got to say Nickelodeon because like there was nothing like, and I know she has fallen from grace, but there was nothing like a good new Zoe 101 episode. Like,
yeah, we used to literally go to the basement to watch the new Zoe 101 episode. Like,
yes,
we planned for it. Like, it was an event. Yes. And I remember our bedtime was like 8:30 and it ended like right at our bedtime. And it was just, it was perfect. I think that the only thing that Disney has on Nickelodeon is the vast array of DCOMs.
Yes.
That are extremely powerful. Like even, you know, High School Musical, that was 2006. So like into the Hannah Montana era, they still had great DCOMs.
Yes.
But yeah, on the whole, I think the Nickelodeon is the controversial answer, and so I'm also going to say that.
Yes. We're Nickelodeon girls, and Ned's Declassified was awesome, and I'm pretty sure still holds up. That show
Unfabulous.
Was funny. Unfabulous slayed my life. I loved that show.
Yeah.
There's our answer. Sorry to those who are bothered, but that is just our truth. Anyway, we have a really important movie, I suppose, to talk about today. So, you know, this movie is full of innuendo, you know, the Scooby snacks, the stoner adjacent interests and jokes. And I would just like to say that I perhaps may have partook in a celebratory toke or a few just to get into the vibe of this movie. And I feel like it enhanced my experience by a very large margin. So some of my notes might be a little bit abstract, but I'm ready for it personally. I can back them up.
Okay, good. I was dead sober, kind of multitasking. So, because I randomly, I just watched it like maybe 2 months ago.
So, okay. Yeah. Speaking of sober, I recently re-listened to like the first half of our very first episode of Sleepover on a drive recently. And I remembered about how we used to drink wine and sit in the hallway of my apartment. And like the intro used to be different. Like we would word things differently. And I was like, wow, we've come such a long way. It's so weird to think about. But if you haven't heard the Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen episode, I would recommend.
Yeah.
Anyway, please take us to church.
I just on that topic, my friend Abby from high school texted me the other day and she said that she was listening to one of the really early episodes, like from season one, and that I said, it might have been the Princess Diaries one, that I said that I hated Roger Ebert. Like, and I, because it
things
was
have
before.
Changed.
Yeah, it was before I started using his reviews, like, religiously and, like, also just, like, learned who he was. Like, I was just saying shit at that point.
Also, you gotta give credit where credit is due because Yara was really the one who showed us the light with Roger Ebert, at least to me. So, thanks, Yara.
But anyway, let's get into the facts on 2002's Scooby-Doo. So, it was released on June 8th. 2002 in theaters, and a lot of you probably are aware of the rating lore around this movie. It was rated PG when it came out, but the original intention was for it to be rated PG-13, and a lot of people thought that there was an unreleased rated R cut that got kind of cut down and down and down and down until it was just PG. So at some point last year, there was somebody who tweeted the writer of this screenplay, James Gunn, and was like, everybody says release the Snyder cut, but I say release the Gunn cut or something like yeah. to that effect. And so the writer, James Gunn, responded, like quote tweeted this person. And I'm going to read what he said. So he said, the movie was originally meant to be PG-13 and was cut down to PG after like three parents were outraged at a test screening in Sacramento. The studio decided to go a more family-friendly route. Language and jokes and sexual situations were removed, including a kiss between Daphne and Velma. Cleavage was CGI'd over, but thankfully the farting remained. I thought at the time the rating change was a mistake. I felt like a lot of teens came out for the first film and didn't get what they wanted and didn't come back for the sequel. But today, I don't know. So many young kids loved those movies, which is pretty cool. Also, for the record, I doubt any of those old cuts still exist.
I gotta say, you can tell that there was a different cut of this when you're watching it.
Yeah. I mean, that's why the fans are so adamant about it and have been vocal yeah. for over the years. And now we're adults. So it's kind of like, what is the deal with that movie?
Yeah, definitely. It has, Josh and I were talking about it because we watched it together, and like the top three ways we described it were like spooky, followed by food, followed by horny. Like those are the three main elements to this movie. And we were like wondering if there's more to it than just that. So I guess there was. But I'm sure we will get into that more as we keep going here.
Okay, so Scooby-Doo was directed by Raja Gosnell, and he directed Never Been Kissed, Big Mama's House, and Scooby-Doo 1 and 2, as well as the Smurf movies, Home Alone 3, and Beverly Hills Chihuahua. But he is also an editor, and he edited Home Alone 2 and Pretty Woman, which I thought was interesting.
Is that a thing that happens very often?
Yeah. It does happen. It's not the most common, but it does happen mm-hmm. for sure.
That's interesting.
Because being an editor is like really the closest you can get to being a director as far as creative direction if your partnership with the director is truly like you trust each other and it's not just like micromanaging. The movie was produced by 11 people. It was executive produced by Robert Engelman, Andrew Mason, Kelly Smith-Waite, and Hanna Barbera, who are the people that created the original stories. All of those people, though, other than Hanna Barbera, produce like dark male movies. Like I didn't even want to like
weird
go into it. I was just like, it's all the same.
Yeah, yeah.
It was produced by Richard Suckle and Charles Roven.
Richard who?
Yeah. Richard Suckle produced American Hustle, Wonder Woman, and The Suicide Squad. And then Charles Roven produced The Dark Knight and all the same movies as Richard. It was written by, as I said, the original characters were written by William Hanna and Joseph Barbera. The story was written by Craig Tightly and James Gunn. And Craig over here wrote the screenplay for Percy Jackson and Cheaper by the Dozen.
Thank you, Craig.
And then the screenplay itself was written by James Gunn, and he has written Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2, Movie 43, and Super. I don't know what those last two are, but it's really Guardians of the Galaxy.
So, logline. Zoinks. 2 years after a clash of egos forced Mystery Inc. to close its doors, Scooby-Doo and his clever crime-solving cohorts, Fred, Daphne, Shaggy, and Velma, are individually summoned to Spooky Island to investigate a series of paranormal incidents at the ultra-hip Spring Break hotspot. Taglines. Audrey, it has to be you.
Okay, so for some reason, there's like 40 taglines for this movie. We've got, and they're all pretty predictable, but we've got zoinks. And then throughout the ages, one hero has cowered above the rest. And then the new do 2002. do as in D-O-O, of course. Mm-hmm. Be afraid. Be kind of afraid. Stupid. A hero will rise on four legs. And then the gang's all here. Get a clue. And finally, the ghouls are revolting.
Which one's your favorite?
I think the gang's all here.
I was going to say the same thing. I like that one.
Or I kind of like be afraid, be kind of afraid.
That one is clever as well.
Yeah, I think that one's good because it like delivers the tone of the movie a little bit.
Okay, now for this cast. First of all, we have Sarah Michelle Gellar as Daphne, definitely best known as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but she also was in Cruel Intentions and I Know What You Did Last Summer. Kind of cool that she's already kind of like spooky slash horror slash thriller associated. And then in this movie, on top of being like gorgeous and funny, like excellent casting choice in that sense. This whole movie is just a demonstration of great casting, basically. But then next up, you have Matthew Lillard, who was in SLC Punk, The Descendants, and Scream. But also, I will have you know that he loved being Shaggy so much that I'm pretty sure he voices Shaggy in the new reboot of the cartoon. So he was like, this is the role I was born to play, and has like continued to do the part, which is great because obviously, he is like the perfect person to play this part. So, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, as we get into it.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Freddie Prinze Jr. as Fred. He is in She's All That. And also, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
There's a huge like cinematic universe that involves like the same six people in those like 90s movies. But like, as we'll discuss, like Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. were married and they still are.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, that's good to know. Okay. Well, I need to research that specifically because now I'm curious. Okay, next up we have Linda Cardellini, the Linda Cardellini in my mind, best known for Freaks and Geeks, Dead to Me, Chutney in Legally Blonde, aka the one with the perm who gets exposed in the end. And she's also in Brokeback Mountain, which, bitch, I still have not seen Brokeback Mountain. And I cannot believe that she's also in it.
Incredibly fucked up that you haven't seen.
I know. Moving on from my shortcomings as a media consumer to discuss Rowan Atkinson, who plays Mr. Mondavarius. This dude is just Mr. Bean to me more than anything else, but he's also in The Lion King, which,
yeah,
the original?
Mm-hmm.
Who is he?
The, like, bird.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What's that guy's name? I don't remember. The toucan
something?
With the accent. Yeah, Zazu. There you go. Good memory. Oh. Dang. Okay.
I said Tatu.
Oh, well, you know what? It got me there. So that's good enough. And then he was also in Johnny English. So cool. And then next up and lastly for this moment, we have Isla Fisher, who played Mary Jane. And she is best known for Wedding Crashers, Confessions of a Shopaholic, LOL, and Definitely Maybe. And she's really pretty. Everyone in this cast, not to shit on Mr. Bean, but excluding Mr. Bean, is very pretty, I would say.
So, budget. The budget for Scooby-Doo was $84 million. And on box office opening weekend, they made $54,155,312.
Wow.
Pretty good. And then globally, they have made $275.7 million, and it was the 15th most successful film worldwide in 2002.
Okay, so yes, yeah, speaking of how people reacted to it, let's get into these critical opinions. So first of all, this movie earned a 30% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, which personally seems brutal to me, but whatever. Critic consensus is, though Matthew Lillard, is uncannily spot on as Shaggy, Scooby-Doo is a tired live-action update filled with lame jokes. And then here's just some little critic opinions. Even its look is awfully cheesy and clunky, the special effects notwithstanding. Scooby-Doo makes Stuart Little seem like Citizen Kane in comparison. Ooh, that is good. Okay. What really makes this movie special is Matthew Lillard's inspired performance as Shaggy. It's not only a dead-on impersonation of the cartoon character, but it also comes with a certain kind of unique joy and a genuine soul. Oh my God, that's so nice. But it is true. So for one of the best rides of this summer, grab your Scooby snacks and sit back and watch 87 minutes of some of the best fun you've had since being glued to the television Saturday mornings as a kid. Personally, I agree with that one. And then, of course, we have Mr. Roger Ebert here, and he was not pleased with this movie. This is what he had to say.
Not at all.
I pray, dear readers, that you do not send me mail explaining the genius of Scooby-Doo and attacking me for being ill-prepared to write this review. I have genuinely turned myself in. Not only am I ill-prepared to review the movie, but I venture to guess that anyone who is not literally a member of a Scooby-Doo fan club would be equally incapable. This movie exists in a closed universe, and the rest of us are aliens. The internet was invented so that you can find someone else's review of Scooby-Doo. Start surfing. That was very fun to read. I like want to do that as a monologue for like my middle school play. Like that is amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So he didn't, did he literally not even watch it?
No, he did. He just, the whole review, this is like his conclusion, but the whole review, he's just like, I literally do not know what I'm watching, but for some reason the director loves boobs and I don't get it. I don't know what's going on. He thought, you know, it's trashy and stupid and below humans, essentially.
Below humans. It's a subhuman piece of content. Wow.
He just was not, he, because, you know, if you're Roger Ebert, honestly, yeah, this isn't for you. Like, I don't think you should.
No, it's not for him. That is totally true.
The audience score was 39%. And I thought that was interesting because we've only got a 9% difference between critic and audience score. And I was kind of thinking the audience score might be like way higher for this.
Yes. Yes.
But it's really not. It's still not a good score.
No.
And then I've got a few audience opinions here. The first one is Scrappy-Doo still haunts my dreams to this day because of this movie.
Real.
Very real. The second one is fun for kids and awful for adults. Good thing I saw this when I was a kid. And the third one is this is not the Scooby-Doo I grew up with.
Real. Very, very real. Okay, gossip section. Here's just some pop cultural little tidbits from 2002. Here we go. And there's some really heavy hitters at the end of this for me personally. So thank you, Audrey, for cultivating this the way that you did. Yeah. I may shuffle the order a bit to be able to accommodate my comments. Okay, so first of all, Halle Berry became the first Black actress to win an Oscar for Best Actress. Ben Affleck was People's Sexiest Man Alive. I feel like I saw that episode or that issue of People. The Anna Nicole Show premiered on E! The first cell phone with a built-in camera was released. Sarah Michelle married Freddie Prinze Jr. What timing? And then there's three really big ones to me personally and Audrey. First of all, Kelly Clarkson won the first season of American Idol, which controversially we did not watch, which is kind of weird to me because we watched like a bunch of seasons as a family after that.
I think we just didn't know about it.
Yeah, I think it was like the craze became massive like after the first season.
Yeah.
And then Avril Lavigne released her debut album, Let Go, which is one of my favorite albums of all time to this very day. It is like a perfect album. It's so good. And then last but not least, the Rapunzel Barbie movie was released, which we had and loved, I feel. Penelope the Dragon was a fave. I really like the part where Mother Gothel goes, and this is how you thank me.
I've taken care of you since you were a baby, and this is how you thank me.
I would love to do that movie on Sleepover Cinema at some point. That would be amazing. We should definitely do it. So when did we first watch Scooby-Doo, and what do we remember? I have a decent amount. But what do you remember?
I don't know when I saw it the first time. I think way late, like way later than most people our age.
Okay.
I don't have a specific memory of seeing it the first time, but I definitely wasn't little when I saw it the first time.
Okay.
And then, so all I really remembered about it is that Linda Cardellini and Sarah Michelle Gellar are in it. And Yes. I just remember that. I remember them as a duo. I remember their outfits, stuff like that. And then how creepy the animation was to me.
Yes. Very real. Okay. My notes are kind of similar. So, first of all, in terms of when I saw it the first time, I am pretty sure that the first time I saw it was at Mrs. McFarlane's house.
Oh.
And so literally everyone who listens to this other than us, in the neighborhood that Audrey and I grew up in up through 2007, there was this old lady who lived on the same block as us. She was literally like 95 years old. And she had great granddaughters who lived in Florida sometimes and London sometimes that would come and stay with her for the summer. And so they were like our fun, cute seasonal friends. Yeah. And their names were Maddie and Blair. They're both still alive and well. In fact, I interact with Maddie on Instagram kind of often, but I haven't seen her since I was like probably like 11. But I remember watching this movie in the basement of Mrs. McFarlane's house. And I remember seeing Mr. Bean and being like, that man is terrifying to look at. Like, that man makes me uncomfortable. So I remember that. But I also have some memories of like maybe watching it in Boston, which that timeline doesn't really check out because we lived in Boston in 2001, but whatever. Okay, other things I remembered. I always felt like it was kind of inappropriate, but in a way that I couldn't really place. Like, it's one of those movies with the same vibe as the live action Cat in the Hat to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being like, Mary Jane, ha ha ha, weed joke, very clever.
Yeah. Do you remember when you first like really registered what weed was?
Actually, I was asking myself that same question. I kind of feel like the first time I really registered what it was, coincidentally, as we were talking about Avril Lavigne, is that she has this song called Too Much to Ask on the Let Go album. And she goes, "It's the first time I ever felt this lonely. Wish someone could hurt or feel this pain. It's funny when you think it's gonna work out till you chose weed over me. You're so lame." And I remember being like, what's that? And then also, yeah, like the downgrade from my K through 5 school to my 6th through 8th grade school right before I moved was like a violent plop down into reality. And I'm pretty sure that we like talked about weed all the time then. So somewhere around that time is when I figured it out. Do you remember?
No, but that lyric, I thought she was saying like, so I basically thought she said, "So you chose meat over me." So you chose
understandable
meat over me. Like, kind of so lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you're a little kid also, you're like, what? It's like your brain will just come up with some other way to explain what is happening if you don't know what it is.
I guess roughly around, it had to be for me around 7th grade because would have been in 9th grade. So I think.
Yes. Yes.
I think I would have figured it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And I've always been friends with stoners. Like, as long as there have been stoners around, I have been friends with them. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I didn't understand it at all, but I think I knew it existed.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even understand it for a long time. Like, I remember it was actually kind of like drama for a while because my best friend in high school had an older sister and she started smoking weed with a bunch of these boys that we were friends with before I ever did. But she like thought she was really cool for doing it, because like, of course, like 9th and 10th graders think they're like super cool for smoking weed if they do. And I remember being like salty about it. And like, I literally have like really funny journal entries from 10th grade where I'm like talking shit about that specifically. But then I had a huge crush on a stoner guy also. So it was basically all around me, but I just waited a few years.
And trust and believe, I would be scandalized when that happened.
Oh, you were scandalized at every turn with everything that I ever did. Like, I wish that I had, I mean, I don't, but I do wish that I had like a record of like every time that you would like pick me up from a party and I was drunk or something, like end of high school. Those were good. They were funny moments looking back at it.
But I think I was just so naive to everything that I was like scared. Like I had like genuine fear about things that really should have been normalized to me at the time. Like imagine how it would be so much healthier for me to just know what things are and understand it. Like it was very Spring Awakening vibes out here. Like I just did not know.
And I always wondered too, like, if you were so resistant to, like, I mean, my very tame activities, like drinking and not driving and like smoking a little bit of weed and then getting a ride home. Like, I always wondered if you were so resistant to them because you were like trying to be like obstinate or like intentionally like differentiating yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
do you feel
I think
like, that's
like
true?
I didn't. I think that's true. Yeah, I like just had that instinct, but there was also just in general, like none of my friends like had weed, or we didn't even attempt drinking until my senior year of high school. So it was just a later thing for me. So I was just like, I don't know what's going on.
Well, the thing that got me to, and I hope that there's been enough time that's passed for me to be able to say this, is that, like, the whole thing with me and Audrey is that, like, Audrey is, like, 5 million times more subtle than I am. Like, so much more subtle than I am. Mom was actually weirdly chill about it. She was like, as long as you don't drive and you don't, like, die, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I can appreciate that she was just clear about that. But yeah, I don't think she ever I don't think she ever thought I was going to drink. So, because I remember like actively refusing to have like a sip of wine.
Yes, I remember that too.
At dinner or whatever. Because I was just like, no, I'm so rule following or whatever.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, now I get like wine gifts every Christmas.
Yes.
It's a slippery slope, kids. That's all I can say.
Okay, so now that we got through all that, we will be right back to talk about Scooby-Doo. You can see this movie on HBO Max. It was very easy to access. Looked good, was fun. And we will be back momentarily.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, everyone, we are back, and it is time to go through our thoughts and takes regarding 2002's live-action adaptation of Scooby-Doo. Where should we begin?
I mean, let's just start, get the obvious out of the way, and that is that, yes, Matthew Lillard was born to play Shaggy. Everybody yes. has known that. Everybody recognizes that. It's definitely like his most lovable part. And yes. it's just true. Like, that's the first thing I wrote. I actually wrote, Lillard was born to be Shaggy.
Yes. Yes.
Daphne's like travel outfit, the purple travel outfit, is god tier. It's very, yes. very good. And I think it's even like, I don't remember if it was actually like Louis Vuitton bags, but it was to that effect.
Yeah.
I was noticing that I feel like you were saying this movie falls into the Cat in the Hat category. I agree, mm-hmm. but it also mm-hmm. fits into Josie and the Pussycats and Charlie's Angels.
Yep. I had the same thought too.
Yeah, it's that particular vibe. And mm-hmm. especially with Josie, because it's also Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
And, you know, the comic book adaptation type of thing.
Right.
And then finally, I think they did a good job translating a cartoon look of setting into production design. But yeah, those are my appreciates.
Okay. I have some appreciates that supplement what you're saying and are kind of separate things. So I also just want to give Linda Cardellini her flowers. I love her.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like they casted her. Okay, this might sound weird, but I don't mean it that way. I feel like they casted her with like sexy Velma in mind more than like nerdy Velma. So when they like don't play that up as much, it's a little bit like, the flavor of Velma is just a little bit like fruity, but also a little bit like what in this movie? But I love her, obviously. I think that theme park, well, first of all, when you see the theme park, when they're like coming through on the boat and like you see the whole vista of the thing, it's so good. Or like the plane, whatever it is. I loved seeing all the rides. I was like, that looks like a fun ass place. And I feel like theme park is like a genius setting for this movie in a couple different ways. First of all, because the sets can look bad, kind like bad or very like not like cheap, but like cartoony and like tacky. And like that is perfect because it's supposed to look that way. Like that's how theme parks are. So I thought that that was a really efficient setting. But then also another reason why I thought that that was a really smart choice is because you know how like little, okay, it's like people like us and children love theme parks, but like a lot of adults, when they think of theme parks, they're like, oh God, like standing in the sun, like dealing with crabby kids, like crowds, lines, weird characters, all that. And I feel like that is like a really good metaphor for what the movie itself is like. Like people like us and kids would love this movie, but yeah. in general, like real grown-up adults are like, get me the hell out of here, but we're like here for all of it. Like the colors, how overdone it is, all that. It was just so fun to watch. And I thought the theme park was a really good setting.
Hannah, I'm like, I think we might have our first episode where we don't agree.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I'm ready for it. I have a lot of bad too, though.
Okay. Because I'm sensing an overall, yes, it's worthwhile from you.
You may be right. You may be right. But you know what? You got to keep in mind, I was stoned when I watched this movie.
Yeah.
So I think that that augmented my experience in a good way. So notable things. When I was a kid and I watched this movie, I don't think I understood that when like the ride turned on and that everything started getting all wonky, that they were in a ride. Like I thought that they were just in like a weird house or something. So that was good to understand. And then my last notable thing is that this movie is the opposite of Thumbelina in the sense that Thumbelina doesn't show you a single win for Thumbelina. She's just getting bullied and pushed around the entire time and like never succeeds. But they succeed constantly in this movie.
Yeah.
And I liked that about it.
They have no real hardship at all.
No, they don't. Okay. Well, I mean, Scooby-Doo is almost given up as a sacrifice. Whatever. Okay. Take me to the bad things, Audrey.
I think the time period is a little confusing. I mean, I guess it's 70s. I don't really know. Or is it? No, but it's not. The reason that I wrote that is because when they're walking through the airport, everybody is current day.
Yes. That feels really of that era of movie, though.
Yeah, it is, but it's just a little confusing because it's like they're out of a time machine. Like the mystery, Mystery Inc. Is out of a time machine and everybody else is in 2002. The visual effects are so cartoony, which is okay. I mean, it's 2002, like it's a new technology, I get it, but they feel a little aimless to me. I don't know how to describe it. But, like, I couldn't tell if they were going for a cartoony style or if they were going for realism and this is just the limits of the technology. Like,
I wrote the same thing down, and the thing that really got me was in the very beginning when his head is in the barrel.
Yeah.
That was really rough.
Yeah.
Those parts were really rough.
Yeah, but again, like, I'm not gonna actively shit on them for that. Like, it's 2002.
Right.
It's impressive they were able to do what they did.
Yes.
Daphne's concealer was too light for her entire movie. Yeah. And that is one of my pet peeves. It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And I get it. It's hard to get an exact match, but when it's too light in the under eye, it is just very distracting to me. Like,
yes. Also, similarly, her wig line was, like, not okay for a lot of it, especially at the end. I took a picture on my phone of one part because it was, like, so clockable that I was, like, shook. Like, it was so visible. But, yeah, agreed. She was kind of done dirty.
She was. Like, she looks super snatched. Like, the outfits are good. But as far as her, like, hair and makeup, it was a little questionable. Even as a child, I was not here for, like, farting or burping jokes. Like, I just never...
Me neither.
I never had time for it. Never thought it was funny. Nope. And so seeing it as an adult is, like, an offense. Like, I feel attacked by it. Scrappy-Doo is a blight on society.
He's up in the ranks with Giacomo.
Yeah.
He's worse. He's worse than Giacomo by a lot, actually.
I've heard that, I don't know, because I wasn't ever a huge fan of the cartoon. To me, that was a boy thing. Like, even though Daphne and Velma are in it, I never could flip the switch on Scooby-Doo. I was just like, it's a cartoon. There's a dog. I don't care. You know, that was...
Yeah.
Kind of my thing. But what I've read from audience opinions is that I guess Scrappy-Doo is like really cute or like lovable in the cartoon. And so the fact that they just made him the villain and made him the worst character ever is upsetting.
Yeah. I basically have notes about Scrappy in the problematic section.
Yeah.
They say, "Where are you?" a lot. Did you notice that?
Which is like the tagline, but...
It's like Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you?
Yeah.
Like, got it. I get it. Ha ha, you're saying the thing. But they say it a lot, and I was just like, okay, this is kind of a bit much. I thought that Mary Jane's possession was a little confusing. I was like, wait, she's possessed like everyone else, but then why is she still able to access her real personality? Why is she toggling back and forth between the two personalities? I thought that was a little bit weird. I found Scrappy's motivations at large to be a little confusing. I was like, okay, so was all of this just a ploy to kill Scooby-Doo? And also, do you want to kill Scooby-Doo or do you want to become like a weird jacked version of Scrappy? Or Are you killing Scooby-Doo to become jacked, or is becoming jacked a byproduct of wanting to kill Scooby-Doo? Like, that I was wondering about.
Honestly, good on you for even paying attention enough to, like, process the discrepancies, the intricacies of the inner workings of this plot, because I truly had a hard time, like, trying to pay attention to this one. It was just rough.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had those moments. I think the fact that it was the end of a long day and I smoked some weed and then sat there and just, like, watched the heck out of it really allowed me to, like, get a deeper appreciation for it. But yeah, I also thought the Scooby snack running joke, it was actually kind of funny, but I was also like, this is a little bit much. And yeah, I didn't think the farting was funny. And also, I just thought, let's go into problematic. I'm going to kick it off with one thing. I'm not really going to say that it's problematic because it was very of the time. There's a couple things that were very of the time in the problematic section, but I just felt like Daphne was really skinny.
Well, yeah, it's just, like, wild. I was thinking about that too, like Sarah Michelle Gellar, what her life might have actively been like at the time. She's always been a pretty thin person, but we also have no idea, like, the constraints or the pressure that she was under in her career.
Yeah.
And how she thought she had to treat her body and all that. And so the fact that it was even referred to in the dialogue is wild. And, like, you can totally understand how somebody of her stature in the industry would, like, potentially end up with, like, an ED or, like, something to that.
Yeah, effect. Yeah, yeah. And what she's referring to, for those who haven't rewatched the movie momentarily or, like, recently, was when they're, like, all switching bodies and someone, I forget who it is, goes into Shaggy. Daphne's body. Yeah, and is like, are you this hungry all the time? I was like, damn, that's kind of dark.
Yeah. Because the whole running joke is that Shaggy loves to eat. So, like, it makes sense that he would refer to that, but it has this other added layer to it of, like, this, you're, like, inferring that Daphne starves herself. Like,
oh, shit. And she's a martial arts master. Like, you're really going to have her be doing both?
They made Fred have absolutely no redeeming qualities. The way that Fred treats women in general is wild. Like, it's like they wrote him as though he was, like, a grade A predator. Like, it was nuts.
Yeah.
And just, like, a douchebag. And, like, I never got that vibe from Fred in the cartoon. I would see, you know, he's definitely a little arrogant. Like, he knows he's hot, like, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But he also has integrity, I feel.
No, I agree. I feel like they just decided that he was going to be a douche for this, like, for the sake of this movie and probably for the sake of the R-rated or, like, the PG-13 rated version.
Yeah. Because who's going to ogle all the women? Who's going to provide the body shots that they definitely, like, wanted to take of random women? Like, it's just James Gunn, you need to do some real inward reevaluation.
I was confused, and then later it kind of made sense why he, like, randomly starts talking in, like, hip-hop slang exclusively, like, halfway through. I was confused. It kind of reminded me of, like, Clueless, but when they do it in Clueless, it's very self-aware. Like, it's kind of like a joke.
I could not tell you why that is the way it is, but certainly, obviously, if it's in such a blockbuster mainstream movie, there is something in the culture that is lending itself to that. But we were pretty little at the time, so I couldn't spell it out exactly.
The most uncomfortable thing we haven't even talked about yet, but go ahead.
I don't know what that is. What is it?
personally, my villain origin story is when Scrappy pees on Daphne.
Oh. Yeah, I actually erased that from memory. Like, I actually not even recall it.
Like, for a kid's movie that's this horny.
Yeah.
To then have that in it and to have that guy end up being the villain and for the whole plot line to be that, like, basically Daphne is, like, come on to by guys 24/7 and then for Fred to be like, you're marking your territory. I was just like, I shudder to think what stupid bullshit happened between little kids after watching this. And yes, he's a dog, but he's not really a dog. He's an anthropomorphic dog that walks on his hind legs. And it made me want to die.
Yeah. I mean, this is just not, there's so much dialogue and just like adult elements that wouldn't even mean anything to kids that it's like, what are you trying to gain by putting, like, there's nothing to gain by putting it in there. I understand in retrospect, it's like this script that was meant, even if it was PG-13, like that still wouldn't be warranted.
Yeah.
It actually wouldn't be warranted anywhere because it sucks and it's not funny. So I just don't, like, if that was in a rated R film, I'd be like, okay, fuck you. Like, I hate this. I have a weirdly low tolerance for this one, as even though I know there's people that love it, and I'm not mad at anyone who does. I just can't.
Yeah. I just felt like, well, there were some moments that I thought were funny. Really, my main one was at the very beginning where it's like after 2 years and they like, it's like 2 years later and it's like all the smoke is like rising from Shaggy and like from the mystery machine. And then like you think they're smoking, but then you go in there and they're like grilling something on like a George Foreman. Like it was just funny and stupid. I was in the perfect headspace to enjoy this movie. So I kind of did that on purpose because I wanted to enjoy myself when I watched it.
This movie is obsessed with bodies, like women's bodies and boobs, like in an intense way. The fact that Velma like gets a low cut shirt is weird.
And they never explain why.
Yeah, they don't explain why. I think it probably was a thing that got cut. Like whenever that happened, it got cut. And that probably was the Daphne Velma kiss. And that's probably what we didn't get. Whenever that happened, I don't know what the context would be, but
yeah,
it's my guess.
And you know that part where she like weirdly tickles her?
Yeah.
I was like, that felt gay. And then nothing gay ever happened. So I was like, okay. But yeah, that makes sense that there was a kiss that got cut.
Yeah. Even the moment with Fred and Daphne at the end where like they kiss and then she's like, she's still like, I hate you, basically, but she's like into it. It's like, why can't Fred's entire existence is like non-consensual? Like he just, he just sucks. Like he's the worst character. They didn't even make him lovable. Like they just made him suck.
It's true.
And then finally, why did they give Velma a man?
That shit was so tacked on. I forgot
Velma
about that.
Is a lesbian. Okay.
Velma is a lesbian. Velma's like, a lesbian.
That's a known fact without being a known fact.
Maybe they added that on super last minute or something. Like,
yeah. I mean, it is in the movie as far as like,
I mean, he's really only in like two scenes.
Talking to that guy. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, we all know the truth, okay? So no point in trying to hide it.
Yes, I agree.
So yeah, is it good?
No, it's not good. However, I had a very good time watching it.
Yeah, I think for fans of the franchise who have a immature sense of humor, you might enjoy it. If you are in the right headspace or you have like really intense nostalgia for it, then you're gonna like you'll enjoy it. But like I can't check any of those boxes, so no for me.
I really want to know what the word is for movies that are like this one, Austin Powers, Cat in the Hat, The Grinch, Josie and the Pussycats, all those. I wonder if there's like a word that encompasses like the feeling of all of them, or like
uncanny
what
valley.
Exactly they are. Yeah, it's like that kind of, but it's like also so specific to like 2000 through 2003 sort of.
Yeah.
Like, and like Austin Powers is earlier than that, but like,
well, they're
what
all
is that?
IP based.
Is Austin Powers though? He's like an original guy.
I don't know about that, but other than that, they're all IP based, kind of larger than life, live action, Y2K-ish, aesthetically, kind of pre-9/11 vibes for most of them, and super bright and like the limits of technology at that time lended themselves to this really sort of uncanny look, because things were still heavily physically altered. So like a lot of the VFX relied on kind of like visual markers or things that were actually shot with a camera in the space and then were like layered on top of, instead of being completely computer generated. And so it like lends itself to this just really like uncanny feeling when things are computer animated, but on top of something that was actually moving. Like, for example, when Shaggy jumps into Scooby's arms, like this, that is like a prime example of man stands there in green screen suit. And so it has this like really humanoid like movement to it, but that's not what you're seeing. And the technology is just not taking you there. Like Polar Express, that's kind of like that. So I think it's like a combination of all those elements that makes for this category of movies that's like so specific.
And the raunchy attitude also.
Yeah.
Even in Cat in the Hat and Grinch, it's there also.
And just like this complete abandon, like there was no sense of we need to be PC in any way. It's still very much white men at the top at every level, white men absolutely determining the temperature and like what art was going to be generally speaking for the for mass consumption. So it just like reeks of that for the most part.
I feel like this movie has been like semi reclaimed.
It has,
at least by gays.
It has.
So that's cool.
Yes, the whole Velma, Velma as a, as like a lesbian awakening type of thing, or like that vibe, and that's valid and that is accurate, honestly. As a movie, like you can take all these little elements and appreciate them, and I agree with that. I think there are good elements to it, for sure. But those are mostly like just the actors themselves, or like really specific craft elements.
This was a very good use of time for me personally. I had a really good time watching it. And if you just want to feel stupid in the best way, I would recommend it.
Yeah, I don't mean to come off like biting about it, but I'm like on one right now. I'm like feeling the spirit of like the women in film before me. It happens.
That's real. You have the women in film and I have the gays on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's it. But yeah, is it good? Is it worthwhile? It was worthwhile for me. It wasn't worthwhile for you.
No.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Do you have a Sleepover Cinema sweatshirt yet? I have a feeling that you don't, and you might want to change that about your current reality. And if you want to do that, you should go to twopinkpictures.com/shop. I'll have you know, I have two teenage girl students who came up to me independently at work this week and told me that they wanted to buy merch and had specific pieces in mind. So be like a cool teen and get on it. So with that being said, Audrey, any last words to round out our magnum opus on Scooby-Doo?
I mean, I wasn't expecting, I didn't really know what to expect going into this episode, honestly, but I feel like it was a good ep, so.
I agree. Yeah.
That's nice.
I, love that for us. Love a good episode. And we'll be back next week with another one. Hope you enjoyed. Let us know your thoughts. And we will be back very soon.
Bye.
Sleepover Cinema is a production of Evergreen Podcasts, produced, edited, and engineered by us, Hannah and Audrey Leach. Sleepover Cinema is mixed by Sean Rule Hoffman with theme music by Josh Perlman Hall. Executive producer of this show is Michael D'Aloia.
You can find more from us at evergreenpodcast.com/sleepover-cinema and keep up with our latest creative projects at twopinkpictures.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at twopinkpictures and would love to hear from you there.
And if you love Sleepover Cinema, if it's become a staple of your weekly routine, or if it's a new show you've been listening to, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or share an episode with a few friends, maybe even both.
We'll chat again soon. Bye.
Bye.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.
This podcast was produced with the support of the Ohio Motion Picture Tax Credit and in partnership with the Ohio Development Services Agency.